From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, January 17th, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has temporarily halted its suspension of payments to St. Mary's Regional Medical Center in Lewiston. It suspended federal payments, including Medicare, as a penalty after St. Mary's failed to file reports on its use of $5.6 million in pandemic-related funding on time. St. Mary's sued HHS last week, alleging that was illegal because the pandemic payments weren't misused. They were merely filed late. It also said its financial situation was declining rapidly, with only 10 days of cash on hand. In a joint U.S. District Court filing on Tuesday, HHS says it will allow payments to continue for 30 days. The parties are also asking the court to issue a stay on hearings in the matter so they can have further discussions about the case. Maine Congressman Jared Golden has reintroduced legislation to impose a 10% tariff on all imported goods. As Kevin Miller reports, the Democrat is more aligned with President-elect Trump on this issue than his fellow Democrats.
Golden's bill calling for a 10% universal tariff, or import tax, is identical to one he introduced last fall. But the Democrats' latest version is garnering more attention because it mirrors, at least in theory, the campaign pledges that Republican President-elect Trump made last year. Many Democrats in Congress have criticized Trump's focus on tariffs, saying they ultimately drive up the cost for American consumers and hurt U.S. exports because countries respond with similar taxes. But during an appearance Friday on Maine Calling, Golden pointed out that President Biden kept and even expanded many of the tariffs that were imposed by Trump during his first term.
It's literally meant to encourage domestic manufacturing production and consumption. And by the way, if we start buying more and more stuff that's being manufactured in Maine, right here in Maine, then the domestic good price can go down.
Economists have mixed views about the impacts of tariffs. The incoming Trump administration is reportedly exploring plans for some sort of universal import tax. But Golden's proposal didn't pick up any Republican or Democratic co-sponsors last year, and neither has his newest bill so far. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The commissioner of Maine's Department of Marine Resources is calling on lobstermen to temporarily move any fishing gear near Jeffrey's Ledge. At least 75 North Atlantic right whales were spotted by aerial observers in the area, which includes part of the southern Maine coast, earlier this week. The future of this fishery is in your hands, DMR Commissioner Patrick Kelleher says in a message to lobstermen. He says that failure by fishermen to act could have far-reaching impacts for the entire fishery if a right whale is entangled. He's also urging fishermen to slow their speeds to 10 knots in Jeffrey's Ledge until further notice, because boats of any size can injure or kill a right whale if a collision occurs. The message comes about a year after federal officials found Maine rope had fatally entangled a right whale that washed ashore off Martha's Vineyard. More than 3 million people visited Maine state parks in 2024, according to the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And as Maddie Smith reports, there are now efforts to limit overcrowding.
3 million visitors represents a more than 6% increase over 2023 attendance and the third time in 4 years that visitation surpassed 3 million. Andy Cutco, director of the Bureau of Parks and Lands, says crowding at popular parks like Tumbledown Mountain and Popham Beach can harm natural resources as well as the visitor experience, so his agency is working to limit crowds. Meanwhile, Cutco says Popham Beach saw a 7% drop in visitation last year after severe winter storms changed the beach dramatically.
So I think some folks may be shifting away from Popham Beach and going to Reed State Park, really as a reflection of some significant storm damage at those parks over the last year.
Cutco says weather is the main cause of visitor fluctuations year over year. He says many state parks are undergoing renovations in 2025, and he recommends that visitors call ahead before making plans to visit parks this summer. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
With help of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and other partners, the Nature Conservancy in Maine has added nearly 3,000 acres to the Narragansett Forest Preserve north of Tunk Mountain. The parcel includes a variety of habitats as well as permanent protection of almost 5 miles of the West Branch of the Narragansett River. TNC's Forest Program Director Mark Berry says the heavily forested addition is now part of 46,000 contiguous acres of conservation lands in eastern Hancock County.
We're excited about this property in large part because of its contribution to a larger picture. It ties together a big landscape that is really important for the Narragansett River watershed, which is a fantastic aquatic resource for brook trout and sea run fish, but also really important wildlife habitat.
Berry says the area is an important pathway for plants and animals to be able to move across the landscape as the climate warms. The preserve is open for fishing, hunting, and other recreation, including an ATV trail. The Maine Department of Marine Resources will close several bays to scallop fishing this weekend, the first round of closures in the season this year. Scallop fishing will be halted this Sunday in Cobscook Bay, along with Whiting and Denny's Bay, Upper Machias and Little Machias Bays, and Upper Western Bay. Spokesperson Jeff Nichols says the process is a routine tool used to manage scallop populations.
Based on survey work that we've done, we've made a determination that continued fishing in those efforts would in fact deplete the resource to a point where it could not effectively recover.
Nichols says the department has worked with fishermen to develop this process, which lets regulators respond in real time to fishing activity instead of trying to predict it at the start of the season. And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular look at government and politics. For the first time in more than a decade, Maine lawmakers are staring down a hole in the state's budget. To help fill a $450 million gap, Governor Janet Mills is proposing a few new tax and fee increases. Maine Public Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and State House Correspondent Kevin Miller combed through the governor's budget proposal and bring us the details of those taxes and fees that will likely be up for debate over the next few months. So, Kevin, who might feel the biggest pinch here from what the governor is proposing if these measures go through?
So just to provide a little bit of framing first, you know, state government has been riding along, I'd say, pretty comfortably for quite some time now because incomes were up and we got all that federal assistance during the pandemic years. Well, that assistance has pretty much dried up. Tax revenues are leveling off at this point. What Governor Mills has proposed is what she's calling targeted tax increases. She's not asking for big sales tax increases or changes to the income tax. But you asked about the group that might feel the biggest pinch. It looks like from what the governor's proposed so far, that would be tobacco and cannabis users. Maine cigarette tax has been sitting at $2 a pack for 20 years now. Governor Mills has proposed increasing it to $3 a pack. And then the taxes on other tobacco or nicotine products would go up by a similar percentage. And then she's also proposing to increase the tax on recreational cannabis, and that would go from 10% to 14%. But the proposal that would affect the most people or households is the one that would apply the state's sales tax to video and audio streaming platforms. And so here we're talking subscriptions to Netflix and YouTube TV or Spotify or Audible, whatever you have. We're not talking about a lot of money. I did the numbers for Netflix, and the typical Netflix subscriber would pay about 85 cents more a month. But if you have a bunch of subscriptions, like I know we do in my household, it'll add up.
And we should say, Kevin, that these tax and fee proposals won't cover the entire budget gap that the state of Maine is facing, right?
So yeah, that's right. It won't cover the entire gap. Maine will get additional revenue from other sources, but the governor is also proposing to cut other areas of state government. The end result is actually that the state budget would increase $1.1 billion over the current state budget.
And obviously, Maine isn't alone here. I mean, Republican and Democratic-controlled states are facing budget gaps as well. But I wonder what you all are hearing about what the governor has proposed for this year.
I would say the response from Republicans was as anticipated. They've been accusing Governor Mills and Democrats who control the legislature of spending recklessly for years now. Here's the Republican leader in the Senate, Trey Stewart of Presque Isle.
Republicans are not going to be supporting any budget that's going to be raising taxes on Maine people. It is not a taxation problem. This is a spending problem.
And as for Democrats, I'd say the response has been interesting. We're definitely hearing some grumbling from people who are unhappy about some of the cuts that Mills proposed. And there are cuts in this budget, especially to DHHS.
So while state lawmakers kicked off the start of the legislative session in Washington, many of President-elect Donald Trump's nominees faced U.S. senators this week for their initial nomination hearings, including Pete Hegseth. He's Trump's pick to lead the Department of Defense and is facing questions about his experience and his character. Steve, it's not so surprising to hear U.S. Senator Susan Collins' name mixed in the debate about Hegseth's nomination, but what exactly is going on here this week?
Yeah, I think Collins is on the hot seat with a lot of these cabinet nominations because Trump's picks are so unconventional, contentious. I'm actually struggling to come up with a good adjective that captures how out of the box some of these people are. But there's a distinct deja vu quality to the Hegseth nomination because he has a lot of personal baggage, including an allegation of sexual assault stemming from a extramarital encounter nearly 8 years ago. So there's some similarity to the Brett Kavanaugh nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court that Collins played such a key role in. Now, Hegseth denies the allegations against him, but there's been a financial settlement with a woman. The police report has been made public, and now, reportedly, the alleged victim has been attempting to meet with senators to give her side of the story. The New Yorker this week reported that Collins was one of those senators, but that she denied an invitation via an intermediary to meet with the woman. Collins has sort of challenged this. She's trying to make this distinction between this unnamed third party approaching her and the woman or her attorney. In fact, there was a back and forth on social media between Collins and the New Yorker, but the magazine, which is renowned for its rigorous fact-checking standards, isn't backing down. And Collins is also saying these allegations shouldn't come to individual senators, but the Armed Services Committee, which is vetting Hegseth's nomination. I asked her office this week why she thinks that's appropriate, and the answer I got was basically that the committee has more resources to investigate such claims, do background checks, etc. But as you can imagine, Nicole, that's not really flying with Collins's critics.
Do you think her vote is going to make much of a difference this time based on what we're seeing out of Washington?
Yeah, honestly, it might not, Nicole, because there's been a lot of reporting illustrating how Trump and MAGA world have made Hegseth this sort of loyalty test for Republican senators. And the message is basically confirm this guy or reap the whirlwind, face primary challenges, or get dogpiled on Elon Musk's social media platform. You know, the latter has arguably worked in the case of Senator Joni Ernst. She was a sexual assault survivor who expressed early reservations about Hegseth, but then MAGA unleashed its pressure campaign, and now she's saying she's going to vote for him. So if all these Republicans fall in line, then Collins's vote won't matter all that much, at least in determining the outcome.
We'll pivot again to something a bit closer to home here. You know, the long-running debate over proposed changes in lobster catch limits, I mean, seems to have reached a bit of a boiling point late last week here in Maine. I mean, this has been controversial from the start. It's already been delayed once. Now, it seems after a heated meeting with lobstermen, the State Department of Marine Resources is going to try to drop this proposal. Steve, it's really a fine line that the Marine Resources Commissioner has to walk here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tough gig, Nicole, because Patrick Kelleher is supposed to be regulating the lobster fishery, but the industry is generally hostile to regulations, and it has the ability to run people out of the commissioner's job if they make the politics untenable, and they have. That's how Kelleher got the job 14 years ago. His predecessor became a pariah among the industry, and he lost support from the governor who nominated him, Governor Paul LePage. So that's sort of the political backdrop to Kelleher's announcement last week. he was rescinding this rule that would have increased the size of catchable lobsters by 1/16 of an inch. But in making that announcement, he basically told a group of lobstermen that he thought it was a bad move for the sustainability of the fishery.
Listen, listen, we don't have to listen to you. You sold out to Noah in Canada. Why do we have to listen to you? Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Foul language in a meeting. Good for you. That's our commissioner.
So that clip has made the rounds and generated a lot of attention, probably because it's objectively hilarious to hear lobstermen complain about profanity. But the bottom line is that Kelleher was giving the lobstermen what they wanted. He just made the mistake of expressing why he thought doing so wasn't good for the fishery.
We should probably say here, Steve, I mean, this issue is not resolved at this point, right?
Yeah, that's right. So in exchange for basically scuttling this rule, Kelleher has to now come up with an alternative sustainability plan that will fly with the feds. And I'm not entirely sure what that will be, but once again, he'll still have to walk this fine line that you mentioned earlier, Nicole.
And Steve, Kevin, any reaction to this tension in the State House this week?
The governor was asked about Kelleher's profane retort during her budget briefing last week, and it was kind of funny. She didn't say much, but she sort of looked at the reporter who asked the question, smiled, and made this gesture signaling a slap on the wrist. And so, you know, I think Kelleher is safe for now, but we'll see what happens in the future.
And that was Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, and State House correspondent, Kevin Miller. You can also read our Political Pulse newsletter. Find a link to subscribe at mainepublic.org/pulse. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition with Carol Bousquet. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.